Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, and to my right is the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
I'm great, Carl. What's up?
Well, we have another three-hour show of classic radio, and we're going to celebrate Veterans Day this weekend. Yeah, and tomorrow I will not be here, but Lisa and Mike Costello will be here, and there's a Clark Gable episode of the Cavalcade of America tomorrow. It is such a patriotic show. You're absolutely going to love it. That's really the main patriotic show we have for Veterans Day. Although there is our first show, kind of a comedy. It's a military comedy called The Sad Sack from 1946. Then Fibber McGee and Molly and Escape. And we also are going to play a new game, right, Lisa?
We have so much. I don't even know where to begin. First, we want to say hi to Curtis. He's filling in tonight. So we are so happy and lucky to have you with us tonight.
Curtis?
It's Curtis. Carl likes to call him Chris.
He called me Chris earlier.
He generally does that. But yeah, he's really good with names. So don't feel badly. It's not just you. So we also, tomorrow night, I will not let you guys down. We will be here. We will have a great show. Actually, maybe we'll have a top-notch show.
Probably.
So we'll see how that goes.
I'll be listening and judging you.
I'm sure you
harshly.
Will. I'm not worried. And tonight we have a new segment called Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous.
Yeah.
You want to tell us how it works, Carl?
Well, first of all, the great news is, folks, you can win prizes again.
And call in and talk to me.
Yeah, so you can call in at 312-981-7200 to play the game. We're going to take what caller?
We're going to start with the fifth caller.
Fifth caller. All right, tell our listeners all about this fun game, Real or Ridiculous.
All right. Each hour, I have chosen a celebrity. And I'm going to tell you the first hour celebrity is Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks. I've heard of him.
You've heard of him. So that's a good start.
Yeah.
I've got three short statements about Tom Hanks. They could either be real or they could be ridiculous. It's that simple.
Right.
And it's your job to let me know which it is. Carl will play as well. And at the end, no matter how well or not well you do, you'll still be a winner. And we have great prizes each hour to give away for our Real or Ridiculous segment.
What do they win this first hour?
The first hour is going to be a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas
Creations. Oh, that's a great prize.
I love Tree Time.
Wow, fantastic.
I could sing the jingle. I'm sure everybody out there can as well.
Wow, very good. And by the way, this is program 334 in this series. We've done 334 episodes, Lisa.
That's amazing.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Same
it's
to you.
It's quite a milestone.
I think so.
All right, so call now. Be the fifth caller. Play the game Real or Ridiculous, sponsored by Cat's Pride. 312-981-7200. Then after we play our little game, we'll have part one of The Sad Sack from 1946. Good comedy. But right now, let's take a break, and then we'll play our game.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, that is our new theme song for Really Ridiculous. We have Glenn on the line. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Lisa. Hey, Carl.
Hey, what's up, Glenn?
Listen to the show. Listen every week.
All right. Well, you're our first game player.
It is. So you're going to let us know if this game is going to work out.
Is it real or ridiculous?
All right. You are the fifth caller. Here we go. This is Tom Hanks, okay? Number one, originally wanted to be an astronaut. Do you think that's real or ridiculous?
Real.
What do you think, Carl?
Ridiculous.
It is real.
Originally,
just like you, Carl.
Come on. He took up space, too?
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. All right, Glenn. He collects manual typewriters.
Real.
What do you think? That is real.
Yes.
You are correct.
Yeah.
And Glenn, final question. Time magazine named him one of the top 10 college dropouts.
Real.
Real? What do you think,
Carl?
I'm going
to say ridiculous.
It is real.
What?
And you know what? You're the winner no matter what, Glenn.
Gosh.
You got all three
he
right.
He got all three.
You got one, though.
I stink at this game.
Good.
We're going to have to change it up. Like, we can't do this game anymore.
This is starting out really well, but you've got a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Beddington.
Very nice.
Featuring the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere. Thank you so much for calling and being our first player.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening.
All
bye,
right, Glenn.
Glenn,
great job. I stink at this new game.
You know, it takes some time, a little practice.
Gosh.
But that is my goal, just so we're clear.
Glenn
the winner
did,
to win.
He did great. He got all three
sure
of them right. Wow, good job, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
All right, so we're going to do this every hour, so make sure you call next hour and win a fun prize. But right now, it's time for our first classic radio show. It is the Sad Sack. We've never aired this show. In fact, This may be the first time I think I've ever aired this anytime, anywhere, any place.
This is a big night.
Yeah, there was a comic strip character created by Sergeant George Baker during World War II, and it was set in the U.S. Army. Sad Sack depicted the life of a lowly private experiencing military life. Came to radio in 1946 as a summer replacement for the Frank Sinatra Show. Herb Vigran starred, along with Jim Backus, good old Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island, and Sandra Gould, Ken Christie, and Patsy Morgan. In 1957, Paramount Pictures filmed a movie starring Jerry Lewis. So this was a very popular character. I've never played a radio show. We're going to do it for you right now. Sort of a tribute to Veterans Day.
And,
this was a military comedy.
Let us know what you think about the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Military comedy. This is the absolutely first episode in the series from June 13th, 1946. Herb Vigran stars now in part one of the Sad Sack.
Out of the pages of Yank, the Army Weekly, comes the hero of World War II, the beloved and eternal Buck Private created by George Baker, the Sad Sack. Returns, the conqueror comes home. Yes, the Sad Sack has just been discharged from the Army. Let's follow him as he walks up the front steps of the boarding house he left four long years ago. One thought burns in his brain as it has in every soldier's: to get into a civilian suit and to see his girl.
I'm home. I'm home. Well, I am. Oh, someone's coming. Why, it's Mrs. Flanagan, my old landlady. She was like a mother to me. Hello, Mrs. Flanagan.
Hello. Well?
Mrs. Flanagan, you mean you don't remember me? It's me, Sad Sack. I'm back. I'm home. I'm here. Say something, Mrs. Flanagan.
Where's the $6 you owe me for the third week in April, 1941?
Gee, she remembers me. The chaplain told us we wouldn't be forgotten.
Sad Sack, if I sound nasty, it's your own fault. Leaving us so suddenly, just dropping out of sight.
But Mrs. Flanagan, I couldn't help it. I got drafted.
That's no excuse. Where have you been all the time? In 4 years, you certainly could have dropped in for a visit.
From overseas?
Overseas?
Yes, they sent me there. By boat.
My goodness, the idea of sending a green kid like you overseas.
I was even greener on the boat.
Oh, you got seasick. Well, I might have known that you always did have a nervous stomach.
Yes, but since I've been eating Army food for 4 years, it's not nervous anymore.
No?
Now it's neurotic.
Ah, you poor boy. I suppose you had to spend the whole trip lying in your cabin.
My cabin? On a troop ship? Gosh, all I had was a hammock. After 3 nights, I was so cramped up from it, I could hardly walk.
Heavens, was it as bad as that?
Yes. Then I found out you're not supposed to hang both ends of the hammock from the same hook.
You should have demanded a cabin. Oh, but you've always been afraid to open your mouth and stand up for your own rights.
But not anymore. In fact, people better be careful of me from now on. I read an article in Reader's Digest about returning veterans. I'm a problem.
Now, Sad Sack, don't go getting any silly ideas just because you read something about yourself.
But it's true. The article said, we're men now, and we want to live. We don't want to settle right down. We want the things we've been denied. Wine, women, and song.
Wine, women, and song? Sad Sack, you don't drink, and I've never even seen you with a girl.
Well, I sing a little. Besides, there's something you don't know. I do have a girl. A real girl. Female. Her name's Lucy Twitchell, and she lives at 1222 Oak Street. I only met her a week before I left for overseas, but we've been corresponding ever since. Gee, just thinking about her gives me goose pimples. Big ones.
Why, Sad Sack, then what did you come home for? Why didn't you go right over and see her first?
I wanted to go up to my room first and put on a civilian suit. I wanted her to see me as I used to be. Say, I still have my room, don't I?
Well, your old roommate, Chester Fenwick, hasn't shared it with anyone else, if that's what you mean. And don't let that four-flusher get his hands on your mustering out pay.
Oh, hasn't Chester changed at all, Mrs. Flanagan? Well, I'll see you later. I can't wait to get dressed and go see Lucy. Chester, it's me, Sad Sack. I'm back.
Sad Sack, you're back. How are you, boy? Let me look at you. Turn around. Oh, you look great, boy. Oh, you look great, yeah. Well, the Army's done wonders for you. Tell me about it, Sad Sack. You've been in the thick of things.
Well, you see...
You know, I wanted to get in, too, but they wouldn't take me. You know why.
Was it because your uncle was on the draft board?
Yeah, why, Sad Sack, you know how bad my back is, boy. I couldn't carry a gun. Ah, but forget about me, Sad Sack. You're the one who's been over there, who's been in a glorious fight for freedom. It must have been rough. Tell me about it. Tell me all about it.
Well, the first place I landed
but
was...
don't think it's been easy here. Because it ain't. We civilians put up with plenty, so you boys over there could have the best. When I think of the nights I've gone without steak, so you boys could have Spam. But forget about us. Tell me about you, buddy.
Well, like I was saying, the first place I landed was in New Guinea. I was in the first wave to hit the beach. And there
that
I...
reminds me. And... Do you know that for 3 summers straight, I didn't have enough gas to go to the beach even once? Cooped up here in this boarding house when it was 90 degrees in the shade.
Once I sat in a foxhole for 12 days in 110 degrees. The sweat just poured off me. It was awful.
Awful? Why, do you know what I pay for a Turkish bath? Why, it cost me $10 to lose 6 pounds.
In that foxhole, I lost 20 pounds.
Lucky boy. Ah, but the important thing is you're home now. You've got that discharge emblem on your blouse and you're mustering out pay in your pocket. You have got it in your pocket, haven't you?
Yes, I've got it.
Great, great. When we go out tonight, it'll help us forget what you've been through.
Well, gosh, Chester, about tonight. Well, you see, Well, the first night home, a soldier usually wants to be with his girl. I have a girl, you know.
Why, Sad Sack, I didn't even know you knew anything about girls.
I didn't, but I heard rumors, so I investigated. They're soft. Gee, I got a nice girl, too. Lucy Twitchell.
But how come I didn't know anything about her?
'Cause I met her at the canteen just before I went overseas. She gave me a ham sandwich. Gee, she's pretty. With mustard.
Well, well, so you finally got a girl. Wonder what's wrong with her.
Of course, I haven't heard from her for 2 months because I was redeploying. But in my last letter, I proposed to her. I'm going to marry her.
Marry her? Now, wait a minute, boy. We've been roommates a long time. You can't bust up a thing like that without giving it a little thought.
No, Chester, my mind's made up. Excuse me while I go in the closet and get a suit to put on so I can go see her.
A sad sucker.
I wonder which one I should wear. The blue serge? Or the brown tweed? Or maybe my gray gabardine? Chester! I had 3 suits hanging in the closet. I don't see them.
You don't?
No, that's funny. They were here just 4 years ago.
Moths, maybe?
Moths? But they only eat wool. There'd still be the zippers left.
Sad Sack, I see there's no use lying to you. You're my pal. I couldn't help it, boy. I couldn't help it. I love you too much.
Chester, what are you talking about?
Your suit, Sad Sack. When I read about the New Guinea invasion and I knew you were in it, I had a feeling I'd never see my little pal again. And those 3 suits hanging there reminding me of you, looking so empty and lifeless. I couldn't stand it anymore, I tell you. I just couldn't stand it. So I sold them.
Gee, Chester, I never knew you cared for me that much. But gosh, I wanted Lucy to see me in a civilian suit like I used to be. Now I'll have to go right out and buy a suit before I can see her.
Oh, fine, Sad Sack, do that. Yeah, and get a tweed, a large one. I've always wanted a tweed.
All right, that's the first portion of The Sad Sack from June 13th, 1946, starring Herb Vigran. And he was talking to Jim Backus there, good old Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island. And you've seen Herb Vigran. He's a supporting actor in all kinds of movies and TV shows. We have a picture posted on our WGN Facebook page, right, Lisa?
We sure do.
Yeah, of Herb Vigran. Or you can just Google him. I instantly recognized his picture when I Googled him.
Yeah, check out our Facebook page. We've always have photos from each of the radio shows that we play and some other information and fun facts. So that would be the best place to go.
Right. All right. We'll be right back after this short break.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David Jennings. 11:35. In the evening, we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning playing your favorite classic radio shows. We're listening to The Sad Sack. After The Sad Sack, we're going to tune into Fibber McGee and Molly, and then a good episode of Escape starring William Conrad. William Conrad, who played Cannon on television, he was also Nero Wolfe. He did a lot of radio shows. He was on a ton of radio shows. And, you know, I am choosing these 10 shows every single month to put on 5 CDs to send to our club members, to our Classic Radio Club members. And William Conrad, he's probably a name that pops up on more shows than anyone. But I am going after the biggest, the most interesting radio shows, the funniest, the scariest, the best westerns. And if you want to learn more about this club, folks, we have created the Classic Radio Club. Hundreds and hundreds of our listeners have joined the club. Every month, you're getting 10 classic radio shows sent to you on 5 CDs, along with copious liner notes that I write about every one of the 10 shows. And so you can join, get your first 5 CDs sent to you for only $4.99, plus shipping and handling. You'll get 5 CDs in a collector case with 10 classic radio shows for $5, plus shipping and handling. Go to ClassicRadioClub.com, ClassicRadioClub.com, and check it all out. But right now, it is time for the conclusion now to the Sad Sack.
My, there don't seem to be many suits on display. Oh, that must be the salesman coming over here.
Yes?
Hello. I'd like to get a suit of clothes.
So would I.
You don't understand. I just got back from overseas, and I want to see my girl tonight, and all I got is this old GI uniform.
Wear it in good health.
Please, this is a very serious matter. I propose to Lucy by mail, and to make sure she'll accept me, I want to look good.
But do you think a suit will do it?
Oh, you'd be surprised what the right suit does for my figure. It hides it.
Well, our stock is very low, and I suggest that you drop back in a month or two.
A month or two? But, gee, I'm a veteran. The chaplain said people would be nice to us.
Well, since you're a veteran, and since our store likes to take the veterans' interests to heart, I'll take a look in the rack and see what we've got. Say, what size are you, soldier?
5'4" with my shoes on.
I mean suit.
With a suit on, I'm still 5'4".
What a coincidence. Well, you can't be too choosy on size nowadays. Here's something. Slip it on. Well, now how does it feel?
Gee, I know you said I shouldn't be choosy about fit, but I think it's a little too big.
What makes you say that?
I have to bend over to put my hands in the pockets. I don't think Lucy would like me in this.
Oh, well, all right. Take it off. I think we have one small suit back here. It's a lucky thing you're a veteran or I wouldn't let you have it.
Gee, I hope the color is right. I remember Lucy once said she liked my necktie because it matched my eyes. So, would you have a suit that matched my eyes?
I don't know. What color are your eyes?
Well, they're, gee, I forget. Would you look into them, please?
Oh, all right. Let's see. Your eyes are blue.
Yours are green. Well, do you have a blue suit to match my eyes?
No. This one small suit I've got happens to be brown. Oh, here. Try it on. If it comes anywhere near fitting, I'd advise you to take it.
All right. Gosh, this one is too tight. It pinches me in the shoulders.
Look, before you make up your mind about the pinching, try the pants on.
Why?
The way the pants will pinch, you won't even think about the coat.
Gee. I think this suit is much too tight. I can hardly move my arms. Gee, I won't even be able to hug Lucy when I see her. If I dare.
Oh, well, don't you worry. It'll loosen up as you wear it. Go ahead, move your arms around.
Well, all right.
There. See? I'll bet it feels looser already.
Gee, I can't wear this. It's ripped.
Well, since you're a veteran, we'll sew it up and let you keep it. Of course, it'll still be a little tight, but the important thing is you'll have a suit, and for only
$75. $75?
Yes, we're not like other farms. We're patriotic. We only take 3/4 of your mustering out pay.
Well, I can't wait anymore to see Lucy, so fix it up. Go ahead. Gee, how I love that Lucy. 4 years. And in all that time, I never looked at or had a single thought about another woman. Gee, I wonder if I'm normal.
Well, Sad Sack finally got a suit, even though it is a little tight. And he's on his way to 1222 Oak Street to see, at long last, his girl. But let's go ahead and see what's happening at 1222 Oak Street before Sad Sack gets there.
But, Daddy, let me explain.
You have plenty of explaining to do. Staying out all night. No daughter of mine stays out all night.
But, Daddy...
Oh, how much can a man stand? My son bangs up the car. I have a fight with my wife. My daughter stays out all night. And on top of that, this morning I find fungus on my rhododendrons.
Daddy, you're getting excited over nothing. I'm trying to tell you I got married last night.
Is that any excuse to stay out all married? You got married?
Yes, Daddy. His name's Jimmy, and he just got discharged from the Army. He's tall and handsome and has big muscles, and he dresses like $1 million.
Well, why isn't he here? At least your husband should come back with his wife and meet his in-laws.
But he is coming here, Daddy. He just stopped off at his house to tell his folks the good news. Oh, I'm so exhausted from all this excitement. I'm going upstairs. You be sure and call me when Jimmy gets here.
All right. Oh, now. Now if only my son would go get married to some ex-wack, I'd have some peace around here. Oh, oh, that must be Jimmy, my new son-in-law. Tall, dark, and handsome, eh? I might have known my daughter would go for the physical type. Well, I... Oh, no!
What's the matter?
Wait a minute. Are you the fellow just discharged from the Army? I mean, are you the fellow who... That is, you and my daughter are...
Yes. I guess I am.
Oh, tall and handsome.
Oh, thank you.
Big muscles.
The Army did it for me. I guess they stand out more in this tight suit.
Well, come on in out of the doorway before the neighbors see you.
Yes, sir.
Dress is like $1 million. Excuse me, but that suit. Where did you get that suit?
Oh, I know it's a little tight, but I was desperate for a suit. I was desperate.
What did you do? Hold up a midget in a dark alley?
Oh, no, I bought it. And I was lucky, too. They told me they saved it especially for a veteran.
Oh, I just can't believe it. I can't believe it. Wait a minute. Stand up again.
Yes, sir?
Sit down. It's true. What's done's done. What are your plans?
My plans?
Yes, concerning my daughter. I assume since you're just out of the Army, you're not too well set up financially for a place of your own. You want to move right in with my daughter this evening?
But I, today?
Well, what's the matter? It's perfectly all right.
It is? Gosh, America sure has changed in 4 years. Gee, I didn't think I'd be getting married this fast.
Well, I didn't think my daughter would either. She only told me about it a few minutes ago.
Well, gosh, if I'm going to move in today, I better get going. It might take some time to get the license.
Yeah, sometimes there's quite a delay getting the license. The license? The license?
Yes, you need one when you get married.
He's telling me. I'll kill him. Somebody hold me or I'll kill him. Somebody hold me.
I'll hold you.
Oh, my blood pressure.
Gee, what are you getting so excited about?
I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna.
Please, whatever it is, I won't do it again.
That's not good enough. You viper. You cad. You tight suitor.
Gee, if you feel this strongly about it, I'll do the noble thing.
And what's that?
I won't marry her.
No! Oh, where's a blunt instrument?
Please, put down the chair. Really, I don't understand this. Look, won't you please tell your daughter that Sad Sack is here?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What did you say your name was?
Sad Sack.
Sad Sack?
Yes, sir.
Then you aren't Jimmy?
No, sir. I just got out of the Army today. I proposed to your daughter by mail just before I left overseas, and I haven't seen her yet to know if she's accepted me. Who's Jimmy?
Oh, what a relief this is. Sad Sack, let me shake your hand. I like you.
How long do you think you'll feel that way before you have the chair up in the air again?
Oh, forget that. You see, my daughter got married last night to a boy named Jimmy, and I mistook you for Jimmy, and I thought you hadn't married her. But now everything is wonderful.
Gee, I'm glad it all worked out so good. Did you say she was married?
Yes, and she... Oh, I forgot about you. I'm sorry, son.
Oh, that's all right. Everybody forgets about me. Gosh, 4 years of dreaming about her. And I was so true to her. Whenever I'd start dreaming of Lana Turner or Hedy Lamarr, I'd force myself to wake up. Well, goodbye.
Wait a minute, son. Wouldn't you like to see her and talk to her before you go?
No, I couldn't stand. I don't know what I'll do now. But will you give her this? It's a present I brought back from the South Pacific for her.
Well, it's a pretty package. What is it?
A coconut. They grow there. Goodbye. Oh, life holds nothing for me anymore. There's only one thing left for me to do, and I'm gonna do it right now.
Well, what can I do for you, buddy?
I want to re-enlist.
Re-enlist? You mean we took you in the first place?
Yes. I was in for 4 years in the thick of it. I gotta get back in the Army. I just gotta.
Why are you so anxious?
I got something to tell the chaplain.
Well, I'll tell you, buddy, things are a little different now. We're not fighting a war where we can take just anybody. We have to have men who can make an impression on a conquered enemy.
But I fought them with bullets.
Yeah, but that was different. They didn't get a chance to see you.
But I gotta get in. I can't face my civilian friends after what's happened. Please take me in the Army. Please. Please take me.
I wonder if anybody would believe this. Hey, look, kid. I am sorry for you, so if you'll just give me your name and number, I'll tell you what I'll do.
Gee.
What? If there's ever another war, I'll phone you.
Here, have some more cocoa, Sad Sack. It'll quiet you down.
Thank you, Mrs. Flanagan.
Ah, it's a fine thing. Wouldn't even take the boy back in the Army after his girl jilts him. It's a fine country. Fine country. I'm glad I live in it.
You be quiet, Chester Fenwick. Can't you see the boy's been hurt? That he's heartbroken?
Yeah, I'm heartbroken. Gee, now I know how Gene Tierney felt in Dragonwick. I don't think I'm ever going to get over this. I just can't.
I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, I'd like to speak to Sad Sack, please.
Just a minute. It's for you, Sad Sack. It's a girl.
A girl? I don't know any other girls but Lucy. Lucy! No, I can't talk to her. I can't.
Sad Sack, the best thing a person can do with his problems is to face them. Now you go ahead and talk to her and get it out of your system.
All right. But you don't know what this is doing to me, Mrs. Flanagan. Hello, Lucy.
Oh, Sad Sack, don't be so nervous. Will you wait till I hand you the phone? Here.
Thanks. Hello?
Hello, Sad Sack. This is Lucy.
Oh, Lucy!
Oh, Sad Sack, I don't understand you. I heard you were home and around, and you didn't even come to see me.
I couldn't wait. For 4 years, I dreamed of coming back to 1222 Oak Street. And when I came there today to see you, what happened?
You came to 1222 Oak Street to see me today?
Yes.
But, Sad Sack, I moved from there a month and a half ago.
You moved from there? Then you weren't? Then you didn't? Oh, I'm so happy!
And now, let's look in on the porch of the house Lucy really lives in, where we find an extremely happy veteran talking to his girl.
Gosh, Lucy. You can imagine how I felt when I thought that man had... 1222 Hook Street was your father, and you had married another man with muscles.
Oh, but that's all over now, Sad Sack. Would you like to put your arms around me?
Oh, gosh, Lucy. I don't think I should.
Oh, don't be silly. It's all right. And you've been through so much.
That's not what I mean.
Oh, come on, Sad Sack. Put your arms around me.
Well, all right. Here goes. That's what I mean.
Next Wednesday, same time, same CBS station. The Sad Sack, produced and directed by Ted Schurterman. Based on George Baker's immortal cartoon character, The Sad Sack is written by Arthur Stander and Charles Isaacs and features Herb Vigran as The Sad Sack, with Jim Backus as Chester and Patsy Moran as Mrs. Flanagan. Also heard were Wally Mayer, Ken Christie, Mary Jane Croft, Doris Singleton, Jerry Hausner, and the music of Lou Kozloff's orchestra. This is Dick Joy saying so long until next Wednesday. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is The Sad Sack. We've never aired that on the radio before. June 13th, 1946, the very first episode in that series that was based on George Baker's comic strip, which was set in World War II on the U.S. Army. And actually, George Baker was a sergeant in the U.S. Army. He created this cartoon character, became a radio show, comic book, series, a movie with Jerry Lewis, a very popular character, and we just played the very first episode in the radio series, Herb Vigran, starring along with Jim Backus and Patsy Moran. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Yeah, you know what, Lisa?
I was going to ask you what you're going to do for Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. I think my son and I are going to go over by my sister's house.
Does she cook?
She's going to cook, and I'll see my mom, and I'll see my daughter, and then my other daughter. I'm flying out to see my other daughter tomorrow. That's why I'm not going to be on the show tomorrow. I'm seeing my daughter, Amanda. She lives in Dallas, flying out there, and going to spend a few days with her, and then I'm going to drive her back to Chicago, 14 hours.
All right. Well, you can listen to the podcast.
And she'll be here for Thanksgiving.
A lot of podcasts.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening. I will be judging very harshly.
We're going to have a greater than great show tomorrow.
It's going to be great. Hey, you know what? You know what I just got in? I remember maybe, close to a year ago, we were doing these surprise boxes.
Yeah.
And people were buying the classic radio shows on CDs like crazy. And so I decided to create a box set, and I just got them in from the manufacturer. They're really cool. In fact, I'm going to give one to you for your dad and your mom and dad, because I know your mom and dad love these classic radio shows. It is a box set that has 50 CDs in it, okay? 100 classic radio shows. Now, by the way, these shows will never, ever be part of the Classic Radio Club. I just took these 100 shows off to the side and made a box set, 100 shows on 50 CDs. Only $1 a show is the... So that's even less expensive than the classic radio
surprise
boxes.
Club. It's just
it's a box set.
One-time gift, actually.
And you know, and it's great for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And you know what else I'm doing? I'm developing 6 other ones. I'm developing a comedy. Like, the greatest shows, this has everything. Mystery, comedy, detective. You know, it has the War of the Worlds in there. And it has all kinds of great shows, right? Suspense, Jack Benny, everything in this 100 shows. And if you want to look at the shows that are in this, it's all at our website, which is 100radioshows.com. So the number 100, and then radioshows.com. But you'll see that I'm also developing 6 more collections, a comedy, a detective, a mystery, a Western, a drama, and a Christmas shows. Now, those other 6 will not be done this year. They'll be done sometime in the first quarter of next year. But The Greatest Shows is available right now. You can order it for Christmas. You can buy this for your favorite fan of classic radio show or yourself. Buy it for yourself. And it's only $1 a show.
So it's $50?
It's $100.
$100, 100 shows.
It's 100 shows on 50 CDs. So it's
okay,
$2
so
a CD.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so just go to 100radioshows.com.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, 12:08 in the morning. Happy Sunday morning to you, Lisa, and
happy
to Curtis.
Sunday. And Curtis and Chris and whoever's in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of people.
He's got a dual personality. He's Chris and Curtis.
We've got the tape to prove it, too.
Split personality.
To argue about that. Carl just there. Likes to argue there, though.
In this hour, Fibber McGee and Molly from 1946 are going to guess the number of beans in the bowl contest with Jim and Marion Jordan. And then in hour three, a good high adventure mystery on Escape from 1953, starring William Conrad. But right now, it's time to play our game. Is it real or... is it ridiculous?
Exactly. Is it real or ridiculous?
What do they win?
They're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. Great prize. And the celebrity is Betty Davis.
All right. Call 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Lisa is going to give you three statements about Betty Davis.
And they're either real or ridiculous. It's very simple.
Yeah, she was very tricky last time. She had all real ones.
Well, I was only tricky to you. Glenn had no problem with it. So
you're like Richard Nixon. Tricky Dick.
That's Tricky Dicky.
All right, what number caller?
We're going to go with caller four.
Caller four. Call right now, 312-981-7200. Play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
I think we're going to be singing that song in our sleep tonight. What do you think,
Carl? That's
very
good, Lisa. Lisa found that song. She sent it to me via text at like 3 in the morning one night.
That's true.
And I heard ding, and I was, who's that?
Did you actually look at it then?
Yeah, and I was like...
You probably thought I was someone else texting you in the middle of the night.
And then I listened to it like at 3:05 in the morning or something like that. And I was like, hey,
that's pretty darn good, Lisa. Thanks. Well, I like it. We have got Jeffrey on the phone. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hello.
We're so glad that you called in. You're going to play our new Real or Ridiculous game with us.
Oh, great.
All right. It's Betty Davis. Carl doesn't know any of this either, so he's just guessing along with you.
I've heard of her.
You've heard of her. All right. Well, that's a good start. All right. Statement number one.
Sweet Charlotte.
That's right.
Okay. Number one, she served as a nurse in the military in 1941.
Hmm.
What do you think, Jeffrey? Real or ridiculous?
I believe so.
Carl?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
I just made it up.
Number two, Jeffrey, on her tombstone is written, she did it the hard way.
Ridiculous.
No, Carl? I'm going to say that's real.
That is real.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
All right. That's okay. You're going to win no matter what. Jeffrey, was she the first woman to receive the American Film Institute's Lifetime Achievement Award in 1977?
That's ridiculous.
Carl?
That sounds real to me.
It's real.
Oh, my gosh. I got three right.
I went by everything I believed, and I just went with the opposite.
But here's the good thing, Jeffrey.
So you're the winner.
You're one.
You won. It doesn't matter. But you know what the funny thing
is?
I think it's actually difficult to get all three of them wrong, but you did a good job there doing that. So for that,
I should win double.
You should win double. I'm going to give you a great prize. It's the desktop indoor weather station. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Men. Give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. Thank you for playing. I really do appreciate it. You did a good job of getting them all wrong.
You have a good night yourself.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Great job, Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Carl Amari.
Lisa, you know, she works very hard. She comes up with all of these questions.
This is a lot of fun. You know, I just want the new segment to work.
You know,
because...
when her valet is chauffeuring her from one fur store to the jewelry store.
I'll stop you.
She
at
does
fur.
This.
I will not wear fur, okay. But jewelry, I'm okay.
Jewelry store to one jewelry store to the next jewelry store. She does this on her iPad.
There you
so,
go.
Good work, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Did you have the Maybach out tonight or the Rolls Royce or which one?
You know what? I slept the whole Mercedes. Way, so I didn't really notice oh. which one it was.
All right. Well, great job. And now it's time for Fibber McGee and Molly, one of the most beloved comedy shows of the golden age of radio. And this was really a radio show that worked on radio, really didn't work on television. There was a short-lived TV series, and it just flopped. This was really the theater of the mind kind of a radio program. These two people that were married, Fibber and Molly, they lived at 79 Wistful Vista, and their neighbors would just come calling on them, ring the doorbell, come in, chat about whatever it was. There was always a get-rich-quick theme generally. Fibber was, they never really talked about what he did for a living. You know, it was kind of funny. They never really talked about what did he do. He just was home every single day. But he was always trying to get rich quick.
You know that cast of characters, when you talk about that, I'm not kidding, what it reminds me of is being here at WGN. Because here we are sitting in the studio, and we have a really interesting cast of characters that come by, stop in,
yeah, there
have
are.
Some interesting conversations, and yeah. move on, and,
well,
and it keeps
like
us
Curtis,
entertained.
Like Chris over there. We don't know if it's Chris or Curtis, because he's got a dual personality.
Yeah, it gets confusing, but we do have some characters.
Yes, that, we have that, lots of characters.
That live around here.
And on this particular episode, there's a guessing the number of beans in the bowl contest. Jim and Mary and Jordan Starr. Let's go back to January 8th, 1946, part one now of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. I know a good many women who made a resolution a year ago and are still keeping it up. They resolved to practice protective housekeeping with genuine Johnson's Wax, and are they pleased. They tell me that not only are their homes lovelier than ever, but they've saved themselves hours of work, too. The fact is, things that are Johnson Wax do get lovelier with every application. I don't mean just floors, but many other things in your homes. Furniture, picture frames, ornaments, tables, doors, and refrigerators. All of these things have a lovely, lustrous, satin-smooth polish that adds immensely to the beauty of your home when they're protected with Johnson's Wax. You save yourself work, of course, because dirt and dust don't cling to a smooth, waxed surface so readily. Just a light dusting with a cloth restores their lovely luster in a jiffy. The year's only a week old. How about it? Let's resolve to have a lovelier, cleaner, healthier home in 1946 with Johnson's Wax. Kramer's Drugstore in Wistful Vista always has an interesting window display about this time of year. It consists of a glass fishbowl full of navy beans, and you're supposed to guess how many. Now, if you don't think that's a pretty fascinating exhibit, get a load of the crowd on the sidewalk, which includes Mr. McGee of Fibber McGee and Molly.
I'll bet somebody could win first prize by betting the same number of beans it won last year. It could be far off.
They say Kramer puts a big rock in the middle of the bowl and piles of beans around it.
Who won the contest last year?
Kramer's mother-in-law.
My gosh, there ought to be some way to figure this thing out scientific.
Yeah, well, why don't you do it, McGee?
Oh, you think I can't, wise guy?
Yeah, I think you can do it.
Okay, by George, I'll show you. One side there, fellas. I got business. Yeah. Hey, Molly. Molly. Hey, Molly.
Get your voice down to a shriek, dearie. Huh? I'm right here. Heavenly days, what do you got?
A fishbowl and 10 pounds of beans.
Well, that's nice. If there's anything we need more than a diving helmet or a high-wheeled bicycle, it's a fishbowl and 10 pounds of beans.
Don't insult the quarterback till you know the score, Tootsie. I'm going to win Kramer's how many beans in the fishbowl contest.
Oh, for goodness sakes, yes, McGee, sir. Not another contest. You were just in one last week, remember?
And I won, too, diddle I?
Well, I will say it was nice of Mr. Kramer to let you bring his fishbowl and beans home with you. Or did you just steal them out of his window?
These are my very own.
Uh-huh.
I purchased them. I'm going to count beans into this bowl till it's full and enter the total figure in the contest, and bingo, the McGees have just won a brand new radio.
Well, isn't that a little unethical, sweetheart? Aren't you supposed to guess how many beans in the bowl?
Ah, pata, leave the guesswork to the peasants. I'm going to do this thing scientific. What have I got a brain for if it ain't to count beans into a bowl?
Well, you got me, dearie. That must be what it's for, all right.
Now, let's see. Help me clear off this table, Molly. I want to get to work right away. There. Now, I'll pour the beans out on the table.
Oh, dear.
Pile them.
You've taken enough beans out of circulation to reduce Boston to a crossroads village.
You'd be surprised to see how many beans this bowl will hold. Well, here we go, laughing and scratching. One, two, three.
Oh, wait a minute, McGee.
Huh?
I just happened to think, has Mr. Kramer a 99-year lease on that store? I'd hate to have him go out of business before you finish counting these beans.
Oh, this won't take so long. How many beans have I counted so far?
Three, I think.
Oh, yeah. Three.
That makes four.
I thought you said three.
It was three before you said four.
You mean before... I got to start all over. One, two, three.
Come in. Ah, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. McGee, it's Mrs. Carstairs.
Seven, eight, hiya. Nine, Carsty, 10.
Is Mr. McGee checking up on the grocer again, my dear?
No, no, he's counting those beans for a contest, Millicent.
Oh, my goodness. It must be wonderful to be married to a man who can amuse himself so easily. My husband has to resort to doing jigsaw puzzles or planning a world cruise or tickling the upstairs maid.
23, 24, 25.
Say, maybe we better go in the other room and leave himself here with his beans, Millicent.
I must be running along anyway, my dear. Careless girl that I am, I was playing my accordion without my girdle on and pinched myself rather badly. I wanted Dr. Gamble's office number in the medical building. Do you know it?
Oh, of course, dear. It's 816. Or is it 618? McGee, what is Dr. Gamble's office number in the medical building?
618.
Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Don't mention it, kiddo. 618, 619.
Well, good day, my dear.
Goodbye, Millicent.
620, 621.
Pardon me, dearie, but aren't you a little ahead of yourself?
Huh?
There aren't more than 35 beans in that bowl.
622. Well, there must be. I've been counting without missing a beat. 623, 620. Oh, my gosh, you're right.
What?
Now, how do you suppose I did that? Doggone it, now I gotta start all over.
Oh, well,
it might have been worse. I might have been up in the thousands someplace. One, two. Eleven hundred seventy-three. Hey, this fishbowl's filling up, you know it? The bottom is practically covered solid.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. You'll win that radio about the time television becomes obsolete.
Worry about that, my dear girl. It's going pretty fast now, and by the time I get...
Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
1177. Hi, Doc. 1177. Give me a pencil. Write that down. 1177. Hi, Doc.
You said that.
I did?
Yes. And incidentally, Einstein, what are you doing? Your homework?
He's counting beans in the bowl to win Kramer's drugstore contest, Doctor.
You're going to do it, too, Arrowsmith. I got the scientific approach. All them other yokels...
Other yokels is correct.
All them other yokels will stand and gawp at the fishbowl in Kramer's window and make a stab in the dark. I go at it intelligent and come up with the right answer. Well, within 5 or 6 beans.
Look, Bubblehead. I am no mathematician, but I do know that in computing numbers, one must take into consideration the factors of variability.
What on earth is that? Or those?
Break that down into one-syllable words, Bonebender. Remember, I'm just a barefoot boy with cheeks of tan whistling merrily down the road of life.
I doubt if I could explain the mechanism of a hacksaw so you'd understand it, Dim Dome. But in counting these beans, you should ascertain if you're using the same size navy beans that Kramer used. Also the same size bowl with no false bottom and the identical thickness. Then you must allow for the refraction of light through the drugstore window, which would make his beans appear larger or smaller, plus a consideration of atmospheric conditions. Dampness, for instance, would make the beans swell, thus reducing the number. Have I succeeded in leaving you utterly confused?
Are you by any chance entering this contest too, Fatso?
Yes.
Ah.
I thought so.
Sure.
Well, you can't blame a man for trying to discourage his competition.
Uh-huh.
But I've got to get along, kiddies. Say, are you through with this copy of Field and Stream, McGee? I missed mine this month.
Oh, go ahead. Take it along, butcher boy. Anything that'll teach you how to hunt and fish will help your next appendix operation. See you later.
Righto.
Now, let me see. Where was I?
1100 and something. You wrote it down.
I know I did, but what did I write it down on? Right here on the table, then. Oh, my gosh, that magazine.
Heavenly days, the one the doctor took.
That's why he wanted to take it, the underhanded old pirate. He saw me write the number down and wanted to mix me up.
Well, that's too bad now, dearie. Going to forget the whole thing and give up?
No, sir, by George. I got my dandruff up now.
Oh.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pour them out and start over again.
Oh, dear.
I'll show that fat-headed old 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, folks.
Hello there, Mr. Wilcox.
6, 7. Hi, Junie. 7, 7. I guess I can remember that all right.
Hey, I don't like to be nosy, Mac, but are you doing what you seem to be doing? Counting beans?
You guessed it, tall, dark, and commercial.
He's checking the number of beans that will go in the fishbowl so he can win a radio on the Kramer's Drugstore Contest, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, you'll never get them counted that way. What you need is more room.
What do you mean?
This table is too small. Pour them out on the kitchen floor where you can count better.
I can count on this table, all right.
Not the way you can count on that kitchen linoleum. If you use Johnson's self-polishing glow coat on it.
Oh, dear.
Why, with glow coat on your linoleum, you can count on it lasting many times as long. Looking infinitely more beautiful and saving you hours and hours of housework.
Yeah, but what that got to do with...
You can count on being able to wipe up spots and spill things with the greatest of ease. You can count on it being so much easier to take care of. Just pour out a little glow coat, spread it around, and let it dry, and in 20 minutes or less, you can count on a lovely sparkling...
Okay, Waxy, okay. You make it. Gee whiz. Don't whip your horse after you pass the finish line. You got any other suggestions? Otherwise, sit down and be quiet. I got a lot of beans to count here.
Now, don't be impolite, McGee. I'm sure Mr. Wilcox was only trying to help.
And I can help, too, Mac. I got another great idea.
Yeah?
If I can only locate a batch of them, I'll be back in half an hour. It'll cut your work way down.
What's that, Mr. Wilcox?
Jumping beans.
Huh?
Let them leap into the fishbowl by themselves. But you better start doing it the old way in the meantime, Mac.
Jumping beans. If that wasn't the sylph... Oh, they wouldn't do it.
All right, that's the first portion of Fibber, McGee, and Molly from January 8th, 1946. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Banish. 12:36 in the morning here on a Sunday morning. We're playing classic radio shows for you, as we do every Saturday and Sunday, beginning at 11 p.m. here on the greatest radio station on the planet, WGN. We play five classic radio shows every single weekend, and we try to do a variety for you: comedy, mystery, detective, westerns. You name it, we have it.
Yeah, this is our Veterans Day theme, and next week we will have a Thanksgiving theme, so yeah, we can look forward to some of our Thanksgiving programs.
Yes, we will. And then, you know what?
Uh-oh.
Christmas.
Uh-oh.
All of December, every single show that we play throughout December will have a holiday theme, a Christmas theme, so make sure you join us for that. And, you know, we were talking a little earlier about Fibber McGee and Molly. It was kind of interesting because Fibber, played by Jim Jordan, you know, Jim and Marion Jordan were married in real life. And they were Fibber McGee and Molly for many, 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 many years on the radio. But Marion Jordan had a kind of a phobia of audiences. And so she had a hard time with the show, as did actually Mary Livingston, Jack Benny's wife. She had a problem with it, too. Oftentimes, they had to dub her voice in because she was really nervous being on stage, because these were all done in front of a live studio audience. So Molly, you know, played by Marion Jordan, she used to sit at a table on the stage, oftentimes with her back to the audience. She'd have a microphone at the table where everyone else worked the microphones and they were facing the audience. She didn't like to look at the audience. It freaked her out. So she had her back to the audience. So when you're listening to the show, think about that.
That's what I was thinking about. Very interesting. And I wonder how that affects the other actors who are working with her. I mean, there's
no
give and take.
Sure, they just got used to it, I'm sure. And then, of course, off to one side would be the sound effects department. And then off to the other side was the live studio orchestra, because Fibber McGee and Molly was a big show. They had a whole orchestra on the show. So let's get back to this now. The guessing the beans in the contest for Kramer's Drugstore, back to January 8th, 1946, for the conclusion now of Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hey, I better get going. I wish there was some easier way to... Oh, I got it. Give me a teacup, will you, Molly? I got an idea.
So have I, but if I'm smart, I'll keep it to myself. You better keep counting while I'm gone now.
Okay. She ain't kidding. This guppy globe is beginning to look as big as a Rose Bowl. Ah, well, 19... 20. Oh, now, who? Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, Teeny. Long time no. Seat yourself on a chair and relax. You don't mind my going ahead with my work?
Oh, sure I don't, I betcha.
Thanks. 21. 22.
I know how it is when somebody's trying to do arithmetic, I betcha. Mm-hmm. You just hate to be interrupted.
Yeah. That's right, sis. 23. 24.
I know I do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody does. 25, 26.
Oh, you know how many presents I got for Christmas, mister? Mm, do you, huh? I got 15. Gee, imagine, 15 presents.
Well, good for you, sis. 15, 16, 17.
Bully Toops only got 12.
12, huh? Mm-hmm. 12, 13, 14.
I got a dandy set of building blocks with the alphabet on them. 26 of them.
Hmm, that's fine. 26, 27. Hey, look, sis.
Hmm?
Wait a minute till I write this down. I don't want to get thrown off my count. What was that again? Oh, yeah, 27. Now, look, sis, I'm doing some very important work. If I give you a quarter, will you scram out of here?
No, I got a quarter.
Well, what'll you take to beat it?
A story.
Oh.
You tell dandy stories, mister. Will you tell me one, will you please, will you?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Ever hear the one about Gus the Grub?
No, I didn't, I bet you.
Well, sir, once upon a time there was a little grub named Gus. You know what a grub is, sis.
Oh, sure I do, I bet you. It's a little baby cattle piddle.
Caterpillar.
That's what I said, mister. Caterpiddle.
You're saying cattle piddle, sis.
Well, what'd you say?
I said caterpillar.
That's what I said, kettle piddle.
Never mind. Anyway, this little Gus was a very ugly little cattle piddle. this kettle pat, caterpillar.
You almost said it right, mister.
A very ugly little caterpillar. He was kind of green and brown and had orange spots on him.
Oh, oh gee.
Yes, sir. Gus was really a creep. All day long, he'd inch himself along a lilac leaf, trying to hold back the tears when the other cattle pit, when the other insects and beetles and birds and bees would, they'd poke fun at him for being so ugly. Ah, poor little Gus.
Ah, poor little Gus.
Yeah. Oh, now cheer up, sis. It's got a happy ending. Well, sir, one day Gus couldn't take it any longer. He crawls up onto a tree and he spins a little nest around himself and just gives up.
Oh, gee, did he die?
No, no, no. He thought he did, but he didn't. He just went to sleep. And one day in the spring, he felt the sun on his back and he found his cocoon had broke open, and there he was, a beautiful butterfly.
Oh, goody.
Yes, sir. Gus was now a gorgeous creature. Flew around and heard the ladybugs whistling at him. And the potato bugs giving him the eye. And he lived happily ever after. And you know what the moral to the story is, sis?
No.
Never complain about the grub, because you can't tell what's cooking tomorrow. Now, beat it, will you?
Sure I will, I bet you. And thank you for the story, mister. Say, is it going to take you long to get all those beans in that bowl?
Oh, quite a while, Teeny, I'm afraid, the way I'm doing it.
Well, then I'll help you, mister. Hmm? Here. Here's two handfuls in the bowl.
No, 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 hey, don't do that.
The King's Men singing Dr. Lawyer, Indian Chief.
There's a doctor living in your town. There's a lawyer and an Indian, too. Neither doctor, lawyer, or Indian chief could love you any more than I do. There's a barrel of fish in the ocean and a lot of little birds in the blue. Neither fish nor fowl, says the wise old owl, could love you any more than I do. No, 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 it couldn't be true. You're the chick with the slickest tricks, and every tick of my ticker ticks for you. Follow through. Tell the doctor stick to his practice. Tell the lawyer man to settle his case. Tell the engine chief to take his tomahawk and go back to little rain in the face. 'Cause you know, no, no, it couldn't be true that anyone else could love you like I do. I confess, I sent a note to the local press that I'll be changing my home address for you. Follow through. Tell the doctor stick to his patients. Tell the lawyer man to settle his case. Tell the engine chief to take his tomahawk and go back to little rain in the face. 'Cause you know, no, no, it couldn't be true that anyone else could love you like I do. 'Cause nobody else could love you like I do. No, 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 no.
McGee, what'd you ever do with that teacup I brought you? What was it for?
Oh, didn't I tell you? Look, I simplified my counting with it.
How?
You see, this teacup holds exactly 329 beans leveled off at the top.
Why, McGee, you're wonderful.
Yeah.
All you have to do is fill the teacup, dump it in the bowl, and you have 329 more beans. Why, that's marvelous.
Yeah, I was thinking about patenting it, but I guess there ain't anything basic about putting beans in a teacup. Look, I'll show you how it works. I got the teacup full of beans, you see?
Yes.
I dump it in the fish bowl, thus. Write down the new total, which is now 397. Then I refill the teacup like this. One, two, three. So I get 329 again, see?
Isn't it wonderful what the human mind can do when it...
Come in.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Molly. And you?
Just splendid, Your Honor.
And how are you, McGee?
17, 18, swell, the trivia. 19, 20. Excuse my not shaking hands. I'm busy counting beans.
Well, every man to his own hobby, I suppose. I once knew a chap who spent his life carving wooden chains out of 10-foot poles.
Where did he get the 10-foot pole?
Ah, I was hoping you'd ask me that, Mrs. McGee. He got them from people who wouldn't use one to touch a man who was always counting beads.
Well, this is no hobby, Latrivia. I'm finding out how many beans this fishbowl will hold so I can win the contest in Kramer's drugstore's window.
Do you mean to tell me, McGee, that you are actually counting out enough beans to fish that fill bowl? Fill that fish bowl?
How else would you find out how many it holds, Your Honor?
Why, I would simply compute the volume of the fish bowl by a rather commonplace mathematical process available to anyone who happened to attend high school.
How?
You merely take the circumference of the bowl, multiply it by the depth squared over pi.
Any particular kind?
Any particular kind of what?
Pie, Mr. Mayor. You said pie, didn't you?
Oh, yes, but the kind of pie I was referring to...
You didn't refer to any particular kind, Latrivia. That's why I asked.
Mathematically, McGee, there is only one kind of pie, and that is
That's why mathematicians always look so hungry. Only one kind of pie, for goodness sakes.
I don't suppose you'd use a custard pie or any of them soft kinds for a job like this. That'd be pretty messy.
Wait a minute. Now, let's get this thing straight. When I said pie, I was only referring to the Greek pie.
Well, of course, if you prefer Greek pie to homemade pie, Mr. Mayor, I can only...
I do not prefer Greek pie. It is not a matter of preference. You can't eat the kind of pie I mean.
Oh.
Didn't you ever hear of 31416?
Ah, go on. There aren't that many kinds of pie. After the different berry pies, all you got left...
Stop it, McGee! Stop it! Will you understand once and for all that the pie I mean is a mathematical term? It's a figure. An indefinite figure.
Yeah, you eat Greek pie all your life, bud, and that's exactly what you'll have, an indefinite figure. I knew a guy once that ate that...
I have never encountered such stupidity in all my days.
Ooh.
Never to have heard of such a thing as pie. Such colossal, abysmal ignorance. Why, anybody who ever... Pie is simply a... Some people... You! And I... I'm sorry, McGee. I was merely trying to get you the volume of the bowl to simplify your problem.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Would that tell him how many beans it holds?
No.
Then how do I find out?
As the Countess said when her husband dropped ashes on the rug, count!
Must have said something that upset him, McGee.
No, it's just indigestion with him, I think. And no wonder. Imagine owning 31416 kind of pies. Oh, well, I'm going to finish this job. 26. 27.
I'm proud of you for counting all those beans, dearie. How many did you have for a total?
9,707. That's the figure I'm going to give Kramer. Well, come on, let's go in. Hi, Kramer. You got a minute?
Oh, hello, McGee. Hello, Mrs. McGee. What can I do for you?
Well, McGee thought...
Excuse me a minute. Mr. Shaw, please.
Sorry, Mr. Kramer.
What was he doing, Kramer?
Walking backwards again. He says so many products are spelled that way now, he can fill orders more easily. Now then, what was it?
Well, huh? McGee has his estimate of the bean bowl already, Mr. Kramer.
And I'm a sure winner, too, boy. That is, if there's nothing phony about your fish bowl.
Oh, there isn't anything phony, I assure you. Just an ordinary fish bowl. I want to examine it.
Yes, if it isn't too much trouble.
Oh, not at all. I'll just reach into the window and get it. Here you are, McGee. Take a look. No, you hold it.
And that's it.
Oh, thanks, Crane. Well, it certainly doesn't seem to be anything wrong with... Whoop!
Only gee! Heavenly geez, the contest is over and nobody won.
Oh, gee. I'm sorry, Kramer. I didn't mean
to... forget it, McGee. I'm delighted.
What?
Huh?
That fishbowl stunt was getting pretty stale anyway.
Oh.
This year, I'll have a real contest. Oh, Mr. Shaw.
Yes, Mr. Kramer.
Bring me that empty barrel from the back room. Now we'll make it a real contest, McGee. A whole barrel full of beans.
Oh, Shaw.
Did you speak to me, Mr. McGee?
No. No, come on, Mom.
The wives of men in service have had to learn housekeeping the hard way, many of them. We've received letters from many Army and Navy wives telling us how they've improved shabby linoleum floors with Glow Coat. A letter just received ends with this paragraph. My husband is home now, it reads, and in a few weeks we'll move to a home of our own. One of the first items on my list of musts will be Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat. You may be sure I'll never accept a substitute for it again. There just couldn't be any substitute for Johnson's products. Well, of course, we're glad to have people feel that way about Glow Coat and other Johnson's wax polishes. The fact remains that a very great many do. Glow Coat is a wonderful floor polish. It gives your linoleum and other floors great beauty, it gives them protection, and it saves you hours and hours of work because it's self-polishing, needs no rubbing or buffing.
$609, $610, $611. Hey, Molly, what time is it?
Just after midnight, dearie.
Oh, is that late? Well, I guess I better finish this in the morning. Help me out of this barrel, will you? Thanks.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Here is a very important announcement. Next Tuesday night, we welcome back our old friend, Bill Thompson. Bill rejoins us after almost 3 years in the Navy to bring us again his famous characters, Wallace Wimple and the old-timer. And now this is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
They were talking there at the end about Bill Thompson, who used to supply three or four different characters to this show for many, many years. He was in the military, in some form or branch of the military there. They were saying he was coming back after 3 years. But the great thing about Fibber McGee and Molly, even though they lost somebody, you know, that went away for 3 years, they had no problem because they had so many characters. You heard Gail Gordon there as Mayor LaTrivia. He was gone for a little while during this military service. You had Harlow Wilcox, of course. He was the announcer. But you had all these characters, including female characters as well, like Shirley Mitchell played Alice Darling on the show, and they had the old-timer and, you know, Doc Gamble and all of these characters that would just come over to Fibber and Molly's house and drop in and talk about, you know, they would shoot the breeze.
Like Roger.
Yeah.
He's
like
our
how
cast
he just
of characters.
Comes in here and just shoots the breeze with us as he's chomping away at his gum. What kind of gum is that?
I feel like if you're on the radio, you shouldn't be
Bridget
chewing
got
gums.
Me hooked on this. This is ice cubes.
Blame it on Bridget.
Well, no, it's ice cubes.
Yeah.
They come in a large container, and it's a cinnamon.
Oh, yeah.
Not
and
a gum chewer.
They're really soft to chew, right out of the container. And I like it. And it's.
I'm sure the listeners like it, too.
Well, now that my mic is on, I've stopped chewing the gum.
So when you do the news, though, you take the gum out,
it?
Right?
No, I don't take
you
the gum out.
You just swallow it?
You leave the gum in there?
I leave the gum in my mouth.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. And that's the great Bill Curtis doing our rejoins there. What an honor to have Bill Curtis say
our names.
Our names. like our names.
I know.
He says our names.
Are you sure it's not
Curtis?
Bill Chris?
Curtis.
Chris? Are you sure it's not Bill Chris?
No, it's definitely...
He's got that one,
it's
right.
It's definitely Bill Curtis. All right, it is... I think I said it's 109. Did I say that?
It's still 109.
Is it 109 in the morning?
Still.
Lisa has not taken a nap. I'm very proud of you, Lisa.
You know, you're making everybody think like I'm like a sluffer-offer.
Sluffer-offer? What's that?
Never heard of that word. I just made up that word.
Is that like snuffle-uppagus?
No,
remember
it's
that?
Not.
Snuffle-uppagus?
It's not like
what
that.
What show was snuffle-uppagus on again?
Oh, Bird.
Oh, yeah. He
that was
on...
snuffle-uppagus. He was on...
He was on Sesame Street.
Right.
Gosh,
he was best friends. It originally was Big Bird's imaginary friend.
Right.
And then became real.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, Carl has those too, the imaginary
He's got
ones.
A lot of them.
Almost like that movie with the rabbit. What movie was that? Harvey? Remember that?
Oh,
movie?
Yeah. Great plan. I actually saw it on Broadway.
Did you?
Yeah, it was awesome.
You saw the movie on Broadway?
I'm going to come in and just hurt you.
Roger saw the movie on Broadway.
I saw the play on Broadway.
Very good. On Broadway.
Okay.
Who sings that, Lisa? You would know that,
on
right?
On Broadway? I
on
don't know.
Broadway.
They say the neon lights are bright.
On Broadway. Is that like Dionne Warwick or somebody like
no,
that?
No, not Dionne.
I don't know. Who sings that?
I don't know. Curtis knows.
I digress.
Again?
In this hour, we have Escape, starring William Conrad from 1953. A story by Stephen Vincent Benet. Very good kind of experiment in terror. You won't want to miss it. It's called Elementals. And that is coming your way in just a few minutes. But right now it's time for our game, right, Lisa? The number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They're going to win a Never Measure.
Yeah,
I love the Never Measure.
I want a Never Measure.
Well, then you're going to have to win this
game. I want one. All right.
And the celebrity is Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando.
So call up, be the third caller, and we're going to go to break. And we come back, we'll play a little Real or Ridiculous.
I'm going to make you an offer.
Here we go.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You can play the game live on the air with us. 312-981-7200. I'll be right back.
Come on, baby, let's get ridiculous.
All right, let's do it.
I think I have three in a row here, right? I've gotten three in a row right.
You did.
So
let's see
if
what
I can keep
do.
My I keep
We've
my streak.
Got Mike on the line to play with
What's
us.
What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
So,
how you
all right.
Doing?
Good. So glad you made it through. Glad we're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Everything around here is ridiculous, but...
Wait, what did Mike just say? What'd you say, Mike?
I said it must be because it's Veterans Day. I'm a veteran. So.
Oh, thank you for your service, sir. All right, let's do this.
All right, first statement. Marlon Brando worked as an elevator operator. Is that real or ridiculous?
Marlon Brando. No, you know, that's ridiculous.
Carl?
I say it's real.
It is real. It was at a department store called Best & Company.
No kidding.
Number two, Marlon Brando bought his own island. Mike?
Yes, he did. He did buy his own island. That's real.
I agree with Mike. That's real.
That is correct. It's now a resort called the Brando.
Wow.
And it's in Tahiti, right just north of Tahiti.
I wonder if I can get free, you know, pass to go there and check it out.
Yeah, with that.
Since I do the impersonation.
Since you sound just like him. And the last one, Mike, he played minor...
I'm about as heavy as he was,
He
too.
Played minor league baseball for the New York Yankees.
Oh, man. I think that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
I agree with Mike. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Wow. You guys did a great job.
Wow, Mike. Great job. Mike got 2 out of 3. I got 3 out of 3.
That's right.
I got 6 in a row, right?
Look how excited he is. Mike, you're a winner. You've won a Never Measure. You can easily center, level, and hang all your wall decorations fast. Eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. Veteran-owned, made in the USA. Get yours at Never Measure.
And Mike, what branch of the service were you in and what years?
I was in the Navy. I was on the USS Kitty Hawk from 1968 to 1972.
Wow. Thank you so much for your service, Mike. I appreciate that. And enjoy Veterans Day and enjoy this escape we're going to play for you right now, all right?
I enjoy you guys every weekend.
Thank you, Mike. Sure appreciate you. All right, it's time for Escape from October 11th, 1953. This is called Elementals. It stars William Conrad, part one now of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, brought to you tonight by Plymouth, with exciting news about a $25,000 contest and the brand new 54 high-style Plymouth, coming Thursday.
You are together in a room, you and the one you love, the objects of an experiment, while the man who has dared you to undergo his test is waiting for the moment when you break and in your defeat find that there is no escape.
Listen now as Escape brings you Stephen Vincent Benet's unusual story, Elementals.
I sometimes think of it. Not often, because it's too frightening. But just sometimes. It's a thing that you'd never believe could have happened. But it did. And when I look across the room at Kathy, I remember that time not too long ago. The night it started. That was the real beginning. It was a slow night. I kept cruising around, looking for a fare and thinking. Driving a cab, hadn't been too bad. But there was Kathy. We were engaged, wanted to be married, and money was a pretty big problem. Then I saw the two men standing under the marquee of the Broadway Theater. Now that was something more practical to think about. A fare.
Eastwood Club, 40th Street.
Yes, sir.
Well, Gaines, what did you think of the play?
I found it very moving.
Did you really? Sentimental drivel. May I quote for you? When it comes to the invisible power that rules life itself, we find that it is, as always, love. The love of a man for a woman.
Well, what's so funny about that, Slate?
It's not funny. It's pathetic. Love. It comes in a poor last in running the inhabitants of this planet, I can assure you.
Well, what do you think comes in first?
The elementals. Fear, hunger, and hate.
Oh, I don't believe that.
You can't face it, you mean?
Nonsense.
Logic should tell you that I know what I'm talking about. The greatest accomplishments, all of the world's progress, is in one way or another brought about through hate, struggle, killing. Certainly not love.
You're wrong. Men do more for what they love and believe in.
Oh, don't be naive. Love. Why, there aren't a pair of lovers in the world that I couldn't turn against each other. Well, I'll go further. I could take the most devoted couple and have them gouging each other's eyes out in a week. And I wouldn't touch them.
You honestly think...
I honestly know. Of course, it would have to be an average man and woman. Him, for example.
Who?
Cabby.
Yes, sir?
Have you heard what we've been talking about?
Yes, sir.
Well, what do you think?
I'm sorry, it's against the company regulations to get in arguments with the customer.
The devil with regulations. I assume you've got a mind. What do you think? Am I right?
No, sir, you're not.
You're in love?
Yes.
Undying, perfect love?
We're happy with it.
And you think I couldn't part you?
No.
Would you like to make a bet on that?
No.
There, Gaines, you see?
I don't see anything.
It's obvious the man says he's in love, but he won't gamble on it. He knows I'm right.
I think you're nuts, sir. And this is the Eastwood Club. I'll say this for him. He gave me a buck tip. And I'll say something else for him. He didn't belong in this century. That's what I told Kathy when I got off. And then we forgot about it. Until one evening a week later when I got a call at the garage.
Mr. Davis Latimer?
Speaking.
How do you do, Mr. Latimer? This is John Slake. You do remember. You drove me to the Eastwood Club last week. We had a slight discussion about love.
Yeah, I remember, all right. How did you get my name?
I took the trouble of noting down your cab number and checking with your company.
I see. Well, what can I do for you, Mr. Slake? I'm on my way out to work and
Mr. Latimer, I shall come immediately to the point, then. I'm a rich man, Latimer, and I'd like to make you an offer. One you won't wish to turn down.
What kind of an offer?
Well, I'd rather discuss that in person. Will Sunday afternoon be convenient?
What kind of an offer?
Oh, you're suspicious, Mr. Latimer.
Yeah, that's right.
Very well. My offer has to do with money. Money for you. A good deal of it. And I assure you that you will have to do nothing which will in any way compromise your high moral principles.
Look, mister, this is your idea of
it. I'm extremely serious. If you will call at my house on Sunday afternoon, you will find it to your advantage. However, there is one point. I wish you to bring your young lady with you.
I don't know.
Think it over, Mr. Latimer. I'm sure you're a sensible man. And believe me, my offer is no joke. My address is 490 Park. You will think it over, won't you?
I'll talk to her about it.
Good, good. I look forward to seeing you both on Sunday.
Now, Miss Vane, Mr. Latimer, to business. My offer. Did he speak of it to you, Miss Vane?
Yes.
Well, excellent. And what was your opinion of my theories?
Are you married, Mr. Slake?
No. Oh, no.
Then you wouldn't understand. You're wrong.
Good, good. You share your fiancé's views that nothing could come between you. At least not I.
No, I don't think you could.
Would you both be willing to test my theory? Let us say, pit your love against one of my brute elementals.
What kind of test?
A test by hunger. Hunger, Mr. Latimer.
That's your offer?
Only part of it. The part that I feel might interest you is the remuneration. There will be a certified check of $10,000 waiting for you if your love proves stronger than my hunger.
How do we prove that?
You will be without food of any kind for 10 days. At the end of that time, a piece of bread will be thrown between you. If you're still in love with each other, you'll of course share the bread between you. If, however, you're in the grips of my elemental hunger, you'll fight over the stale crust like two beasts.
That's silly. We wouldn't. No two people in love would. That's what love is.
Well, perhaps you're right, but I'd like to be convinced.
Look, are you serious about this? $10,000 for going hungry for 10 days?
Oh, why not? I'm being generous. I'm offering you $10,000 to back up your own statements. And I'll even cut the time down from 10 days to 7.
No, I don't plan to starve Kathy or myself to prove anything to you.
Oh, forget about me. You can use the $10,000. Otherwise, you wouldn't be driving a cab. You and Miss Vane could be married immediately instead of penny-pinching your way through years of endless drudgery to save up enough money.
Yeah. Thanks for the drinks, Mr. Slate. We'll be going.
No, wait a minute. He's right, David.
What do you mean he's right?
He is. We haven't got anything to lose. $10,000. And if that's all we have to do...
I give you my word.
Why not? We love each other, don't we?
Well, sure we do,
but... All right. Let's do it.
Look, I'd have to quit my job.
I'll make it up to you, Mr. Latimer. I'll double your salary. Triple it, even if you lose our wager.
Oh, Kathy, you...
Yes. I'm not afraid.
Okay. You're on, Mr. Slake. During the next few days, it was all arranged. The experiment was to run from Monday through Sunday midnight. Kathy and I were put in a large room in the upper story of Slake's mansion. We were always visible through large glass doors. There was an iron cot and mattress at each end of the room, a table, some chairs, and that was about all. At 12:01 Monday morning to the minute, Slate came in to issue his last instructions as our 7 days of starvation began.
I have provided you with sanitary facilities on all the running water you want. However, I'm afraid you must do without soap or toothpaste. Unfortunately, they are edible. My apologies, Miss Vane. Lipstick and rouge are also forbidden for the same reason.
What about reading? Books, magazines?
I'm afraid not. You would find the pages too tasty to resist as time passed. The same applies for pencil and paper. Any other questions?
No, I guess not.
Very well. You understand that no matter how you beg, plead, scream, or cry out, you will not be given food for the next 168 hours. Is that clear?
Yeah, it's clear.
Well, I wish you luck then.
The first day was easy enough. We talked about old friends, made plans for our future, played word games, anything to pass the time. We even made jokes about food. The hunger pangs didn't come until the middle of the second day. They came in suddenly with the sharpness of iron teeth biting hard into your stomach and letting go, and then biting again. Both of us felt it.
Are you all right, Dave?
Yeah, you?
Oh, of course. You're not sorry we started this thing?
No. No, of course not. $10,000, I can take it for a week if you can.
A week? That's not long, is it? Besides, it's only 6 days now.
As the day wore on, the hunger pains grew worse. The iron teeth jabbed into my stomach harder and harder. And in between, all I could think of was food. Winter breakfast in the country. Hotcakes, golden, puffy, a huge warm pile of them, brown and yellow syrup. Roast beef, thick slices, real thick and rare. Then that evening, Slake, who was always there watching behind the glass doors, stopped in on us. He seemed to read my mind.
Everything perfectly all right, I suppose, Mr. Latimer? Miss Vane?
Yeah, everything is fine, Mr. Slate.
Ah, charming. You are admirable guests, indeed. You make so little demands on one's hospitality. You know, I wished for you at dinner this evening. I really wished for you.
Did you, Mr. Slake?
Yes. The bisque had a trifle too much whipped cream for my taste, but the fish... Well, the fish was perfection. Baked bluefish, you know. And the roast...
Cut it out!
Oh? Well, forgive me, I didn't realize my elemental had already begun to touch you.
Don't worry. You're not going to win.
Well, perhaps not. But a similar test was attempted in the 16th century by a Prince Alessandro on a devoted couple in his court. The results were most interesting.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yes, really. They tore at each other's flesh. Tangled themselves into such a horrible knot that Alessandro's men could hardly get them apart. That's how strong their love was, Mr. Latimer.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Are you Carl Amari or am I Carl Amari?
Oh,
or
definitely.
Are you Lisa Wolf or am I Lisa Wolf?
Oh, I'm definitely clear
by
on
about
that.
About 1:30 in the morning, I'm not sure anymore.
I'm clear on that.
I'm a little...
Vermished.
What's the word?
Vermished.
Is that... That's a...
It's Yiddish.
It's a Yiddish?
It is.
It's a Yiddish. It's a Yiddish
term.
It's a Yiddish term. Okay. Teach me more Yiddish. I'd like to learn. And then I can add that to my repertoire of voices
yes.
and... Sounds.
You're multi-talented tonight, Carl.
Yeah, I'm hoping the Cartoon Channel
they
calls
did.
Me.
Curtis said they're on hold.
Oh,
so when
all
we
right.
go into the next show, you'll
wants
be able to grab
offer
that
me,
call.
They're holding something.
They want to offer me a $12 million a year contract, $1 million a month. Pass. It's not enough money for me.
I'll be your agent, Carl.
Not enough money. All right, we're listening to Escape with Elementals, a very good psychological kind of terror story, really. This is going back to October 11th, 1953. Here's the conclusion to Escape.
We will return to Escape in just a moment. But first...
Hello?
Hi, Bob. You listening to Escape on the radio?
Sure, always do.
Well, then you heard what they said about the new 54 Plymouth coming out Thursday. I was wondering if...
I'm way ahead of you, John. Meet you right after work Thursday, and we'll have a look at it.
Swell. And what I was going to suggest...
Well, of course, John. We've got to enter that contest. Somebody's going to win that gorgeous new 54 Plymouth convertible. Trouble is, I can't decide which color I'd like.
Sorry, Bob, old boy, but I'm taking a stab at that contest, too. New Plymouth convertible would look mighty good in my garage, and we can't both win first prize. Afraid you'll have to settle for one of the Plymouth sedans they're giving away, or one of the cash prizes.
Okay, we'll see about that. Right now, I want to get back and hear the rest of Escape.
Me too, but don't forget, we got a date to see that new Plymouth on Thursday.
On the third day, the hunger pangs were no longer sharp jabs. Now it was a constant, violent, gnawing, nibbling feeling inside. It was a pulling ache deep in my head, as if someone were jerking my brain from its socket with an ice hook. And I know she was feeling just as badly. We tried to talk to each other, but we'd already said everything there was to say 5 times over. She tried to cheer me up, but a voice suddenly had a whine to it that was driving me out of my mind. Everything was driving me mad. I couldn't think straight anymore.
Dave?
What?
Tell me about that time you ran away from home.
You've heard it 100 times.
I'd like to hear it again.
You're a liar.
Dave, don't.
Shut up.
Well, we've got to do something, Dave. I thought if we... Look, why don't we count the bluebirds on the wallpaper? You know, I found a new way of counting them. If I start from the side, I can get 22 bluebirds to each wall instead of 21.
I don't want to count bluebirds.
You must.
Stop whining at me.
I know. Mark off the room. That's fun.
I've marked it off 1,000,000 times. 1,000,000 times. You want to know the figures?
Yes. Tell me the figures.
40 shoe feet long, 30 shoe feet wide, 43 bare feet by 31 and a half bare feet, 126 fists by 97 fists, 1,213 thumbs by 931 thumbs. Are you satisfied?
That was wonderful, Davy.
What was wonderful about it?
I'm trying my best, Davy. I'm just trying.
Oh, stop trying. I'll hit you. I swear I'll hit you.
You think I'm not hungry, too?
I hope you're starving. You did this to me. It's your fault. I'd never be here if you didn't stick your face into it. Starve. Go on.
I hate you. You're horrible.
Get off that chair and over to the cot, because if you don't, I'm going to smash your face.
Good evening.
What do you want?
I trust everything's all right.
No, everything's not all right, you fat pig.
I thought I detected signs of gathering violence.
Why don't you get out? Go on, get out.
I could never forgive myself if anything should happen to the young lady.
I don't need your help, Mr. Slake. I can take care of myself.
I'm afraid not.
You heard her. She doesn't want you here. Now get out.
Ah, but Miss Vane doesn't appreciate the power of an elemental. It can easily turn the man she fancies she's in love with into a murderer. That's why I believe I'll sit down and stay a while. Oh, Jacques. Jacques.
Oui, monsieur.
Duty calls. I'm afraid I'll be forced to dine in here.
Eh bien, monsieur. And what is it that monsieur desires this evening?
I don't know. I think an American cuisine for tonight. Let me see. We can start off with shrimp cocktail, but be sure it's surrounded with plenty of cracked ice. Next, I'd like soup. Clam chowder. Rich, thick clam chowder.
It will be as you order, monsieur.
And for my entree, steak. A thick, juicy steak, quite rare, seasoned with garlic and smothered in onions. Well, Mr. Latimer, I must say you're handling yourself very well. All right, Jacques, I'll order the dessert later. You may go.
Monsieur?
I didn't look at her. I didn't care. Both of us were pretending we didn't see, we didn't hear. I don't know why. Slake sat with us smiling. Nobody said anything. I watched Jacques leave and come back a while later with a tray bulging with food.
Ah!
I felt myself shivering at the sight of it. But I still didn't say anything. I waited until Jacques set the tray down on the table in front of Slate.
Oh, the steak is tender tonight, monsieur.
Excellent, excellent. I find myself with quite a vigorous appetite. Don't go yet, Jacques. I may need you.
Slate put his fork into the thick white meat of a shrimp, streaming with red sauce. That's when I jumped out of it.
Get away, animal. I suspected you were up to something, Latimer.
I want the food. I've got to have it. Slick, I'm not taking anymore. I can't. I'm not going to go.
Stay back. Stay back, I warn you.
No, I'm hungry.
Stay back. Now, one more step and I won't miss, Mr. Latimer.
You dirty, stinking.
Really? I'm not as bad as all that. I even considered giving you a bite to eat before.
Lying.
Oh, but I'm not. Would you like that, Latimer?
No, mean it.
I assure you I do. Of course, I don't appreciate being attacked and then vilified by a torrent of insults.
No, I lost my head, Mr. Slate. Yes, I did. You're a really clever man, Mr. Slate. You're very clever. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Just a taste, that's all. Just a taste.
I don't remember how long I cried. When I stopped, my mind was all right again. For a minute, anyway. I saw Kathy lying in the other cot at the far end of the room. She was sobbing. It was a sad sound. I remembered what I'd done. I hobbled over to a cot. Kathy. Kathy.
Don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me.
I don't want to hurt you, darling.
You're not angry, Dave?
I didn't know what I was saying before. I can't be angry with you, darling. I love you.
Dave, I'm sorry. I'm hungry.
That night it was worse than ever. It was a nauseous, heavy hunger that nagged, wouldn't let go. I drank gallons of water. I poured the useless, flimsy stuff down my throat until I choked, but I got no relief. None at all. Morning finally came. That was worse yet. The dizziness set in. I tried to get up. The floor kept falling away. I had rubber legs. I found myself getting angry at a crease in the carpet at my untied shoelace. I managed to get to one of the chairs in the center of the room. I can't tell you what for. Then I saw Kathy coming toward me, crawling on all fours.
Dave?
Yes. What is it?
Help me up. I want to sit on the chair.
All right. You made me fall.
I'm sorry.
Sorry? What good does that do? Stay away from me. What is it? Stay
Dave,
away. Dave.
Stop.
Cry! Go ahead, cry. You're ugly.
No.
You're ugly. Your hair is like a stringy, dirty old mop. Stringy, dirty old mop. I hate you. It's all your fault.
No. Don't talk to me that way,
no. Get away from me. I can't stand the sight of you. You make me sick. Get away. Go
on. I hope you starve to death. Hear me? I hope you starve. Starve. Die. Die.
I lost all track of time. It may have been 5 days, six, I don't know. I heard strange sounds that were part of me but seemed to come from outside as well. I also remember crawling. There was a squawking voice that came from my chest but didn't sound like me, that kept talking to itself. I'll have more cream. Yes, sugar too. And potato, please, lots of potato. French fried. No. Lamb chops today, steak tomorrow. Bacon, well done. I'm hungry. I'm hungry!
You ought to be horsewhipped for this, Slake.
I don't want any sermons, Gaines. Now, you're ready to witness the test.
Yes. Let's get it over with, for heaven's sakes.
All right. Now watch. All right, get up. There, between you. The food is there on the floor. Get up!
I saw it. The bread on the floor. A tiny dot far out in space. Painfully, I slid down from the couch. On all fours, I slowly pushed forward. I noticed a woman on the other side of the room, lying on her cot, staring at me and at the bread. She tried to get up, but couldn't. I wondered who the strange, skinny woman was. I finally reached the bread. I touched it shyly. It was soft. I shivered as my hand closed around.
Dave?
The woman again.
Dave?
I wondered whose name she was calling.
Dave?
Didn't really matter, though. I picked up a slice of bread and sniffed.
Darling, did you hear me? Darling? Kathy?
I started to put the bread clumsily into my mouth.
Darling? I'm so hungry.
That was Kathy. Catherine, the girl I was going to marry. And she was hungry. That's all there was to it. I started across the miles of carpet. Bread. Bread. You waited.
You first. You're hungrier.
No. I love you. It's for you. I love you.
Gaines, get them out of here. Give them the money and get them out of here. Hurry up and get these babies out of my sight.
Would you like to win a brand new 1954 high-style Plymouth convertible? Well, then be sure to enter the Big Plymouth Contest that starts this Thursday. $25,000 in prizes, including six new 54 Plymouths and hundreds of cash prizes. Your Plymouth dealer can give you an entry blank next Thursday. You'll see it contains a complete list of the prizes and the easy rules. But don't put it off, because the contest closes midnight, Monday, October 19th. So how about a big red circle on the calendar around this coming Thursday? That's the day to see the new 54 Plymouth and enter the big contest. Is it a date?
It's big, the 54 Plymouth. It's bright, the 54 Plymouth. Big, bright, beautiful too. The 54 Plymouth is the car for you.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you Elementals, a story by Stephen Vincent Benet, adapted for radio by Meyer Dolinsky, starring Tony Barrett as Dave Latimer, William Conrad as John Slake, and Georgia Ellis as Catherine Vane. Featured in the cast were Ben Riott and Byron Kane. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Escape, transcribed, was brought to you by Plymouth, along with a reminder that you visit your Plymouth dealer on Thursday. Enter the $25,000 contest and see the big, bright, beautiful new 54 Plymouth, Thursday.
This is the CBS Radio Network.